On the record. On News Talk.
With Pinergy. Supplying energy with insight to forward-thinking Irish businesses.
There is no denying how difficult the last couple of weeks have been in Northern Ireland with the sustained rioting in loyalist parts of Belfast and in other enclaves around Northern Ireland. It's all a reminder that there's still a lot of work to do. And it is, of course, 23 years this weekend since the signing of the Good Friday Agreement. But there are still some questions about the state of loyalism. But the Shankill Road, which you might consider to be perhaps the cradle or the bastion of loyalism right now, has also produced many who struggled for peace, not violence, and in particular, a lot of women, without whom the peace process couldn't have been built. And Donal Fallon has been going away to leaf through his archives to tell us some of their stories. Donal, I know that you lived for a few years. You were studying in Belfast, weren't you? So all of this is a little bit more immediate to you.
Yeah, I spent a little bit of time in Belfast. I did museum studies in the University of Ulster. It was a really, really nice time. And when I was there, I kind of consciously made the decision that I wasn't going to swan around kind of Republican Belfast, because that was all kind of quite familiar. And I befriended a number of historians from kind of the other tradition, if you will. Great young historian, Jason Burke, who studies kind of East Belfast in the First World War. And I think through making those kind of connections, I gained the kind of appreciation, if you will, of the other side of the divide, or the other side of the tragic peace walls, if you will. So the streets on which we've seen the violence in recent days and recent weeks are kind of familiar enough in their own strange way to me. And I find them really, really interesting. And this slot this morning, I hope, is about shining a positive light on some from the Shankill Road, who I think we in the South never really hear about.
Yeah, I think those conversations are the sorts of conversations that many people on our side of the fence are likely to need to have in coming years, because I think any sense that there was going to be just a majoritarian rule and that nationalism would win and that there'd just be ignoring the concerns of loyalism or unionism, I think that understanding is long behind us now. The events of this month, unfortunately, have been akin to a past that we probably all thought was long behind us.
Absolutely. And there's something quite remarkable about it. And it's the Shankill Road, it's Lanark Way, the surrounding streets. Last night, 14 policemen were injured in Belfast. And that's an improvement on previous nights. I mean, there was a time when a headline like 14 police officers injured would shock us. But after, you know, what's come in the nights before, it seems like something of an improvement. And it is worth noting that, you know, the vast majority of those who are participating in the rioting in Belfast, they weren't even born when the Good Friday Agreement was signed 23 years ago. And the North is such a transformed place that the police force that they're attacking on the streets, likewise, it wasn't born either. You know, it didn't exist.
Yes, very fair point.
So the rioting, it's a kind of bizarre throwback to what seems like a distant past, but it's on a very modern stage, if that makes sense. It's very now. And I think the defining image of the crisis is undoubtedly that great picture of a youngster, petrol bomb in hand, at the peace walls. And the mural in front of him proclaims, "There's no such thing as a good war or a bad peace." I think that would be an award-winning image in years to come.
I think so. But I think what is possibly unique about the events of the last fortnight or so is maybe the level of interest that there's been in the South.
Absolutely. For the first time that I can really ever recall, there are kind of serious attempts in the South to understand the motivations of this. Not to justify it, but to understand why this is happening. And there was an article during the week on thejournal.ie from an author titled Loyalist Mum on the issues kind of causing contention in loyalist communities. And, you know, some very interesting coverage on Irish radio in the South, you know, with Vox Pops from Shankill, Tigers Bay and the like. So I think because it's not a sustained everyday occurrence, you know, when violence happens every day, people just become totally accustomed to it and it's no longer news after a while. But because this is now so unusual, we're taking a real active interest, I think, down here in what's happening on the streets of Belfast, Derry and other places. And I think there's finally an understanding now that, you know, this isn't about Brexit or Bobby Storey's funeral or the Northern Irish Protocol or Stormont, or at least it isn't about any one of them in isolation.
It's certainly not in isolation.
This massive picture of things, this tapestry of things, a sense of abandonment, you know, real or perceived. And I suppose this melting pot of issues within loyalism. And I find it funny when you listen to the news coverage of it, Arlene Foster and other people, they tell these young people go home or you'll get a criminal conviction and the impact of a conviction on their lives. But these are kids who don't see any economic prospects for themselves, you know, and that's a factor in all of it too. They don't feel like they have a future.
Yeah, and that's the danger. If they feel like they've got nothing to lose, then of course they're going to be a little bit more abandoned to it.
Absolutely. So against the backdrop of that horrible week, it seems, you know, a good opportunity to use the slot to highlight something very positive and this great uplifting episode from the history of the Shankill Road, this movement for peace, which emerged in the 1970s, driven by women, of course, and which kind of sought to build links with the neighbouring Catholic Falls Road. And I suppose given that so many young men in the 70s were imprisoned or interned, that might be the motivating factor in why it was women who pushed at the door of peace in the north. But, you know, today we'll be talking about these remarkable scenes, tens of thousands of people, many of them mothers, some pushing prams, parading down the streets of the Shankill and the Falls together. In the 1970s.
The Shankill Road, it's a name which a lot of listeners will have heard, and they'll have mentioned it in heard it mentioned in news bulletins over many years. To most listeners, it's probably a very unfamiliar place.
Yeah, I think it's probably fair to say most Newstalk listeners haven't walked down the Shankill Road. You know, it's not something that we generally do on our visits north. But yeah, when I was there, I kind of did my best to see places like Donegal Pass, Sandy Road, the Shankill Road. And there's a couple of very strong misconceptions about the Shankill. I think the primary misconception in the south is where it is. You know, we often think about loyalist East Belfast, but actually the Shankill is in the west of the city and it runs parallel to the Falls Road. You can almost see one from the other. And those are the peace walls, the divisions between them.
Yeah.
One of the ironies of the Shankill is the name of it comes from the Irish language, Bohirne Shanquille, or the road of the old church. So it's mostly residential, not entirely residential. And it was once upon a time the kind of thriving heart economically of the city. You had Mackie International, which was one of the leading kind of textile manufacturers in the world. A lot of linen industry there. And the Shankill had one thing that Dublin could only dream of, which was lots of good quality jobs for women, you know, in the linen and manufacturing industries. Now, of course, that is all gone. That's a distant memory. On the Shankill today.
Yeah, just when you mentioned that the Irish language links of the name, I'm always slightly amused and somewhat frustrated when you hear some of the complaints around an Irish language act and you hear loyalists, you know, maybe with some justification saying that that community doesn't want Irish language place names, that they don't want there to be, you know, the street names to be bilingual. And then you sort of ask them, well, what do you think the Shankill Road sounds like when it's Osgoelga? That it probably sounds exactly like it currently is. One thing is as well too, which is, you know, aside from the industry that it used to have and the influence that it has now, or the amount it gets mentioned in news, is that it's not an especially large place.
It isn't. And going back to the murals, there is one mural which proclaims Law of Dara Gabu, but I think that's very much just a wind-up at the neighbours. But the kind of the greater Shankill area, so we're talking about the Shankill, Woodvale and its vicinity, that's home to less than 25,000 people, which is absolutely incredible. I mean, like the suburbs in Dublin with more people living in them than that. And kind of despite its small size, it's deeply scarred by the Troubles. I mean, every corner of the Shankill is a commemorative plaque to civilian lives lost, sometimes paramilitary participants. And in that sense, I suppose history is this kind of very real everyday thing in the lives of people who live there, not unlike the neighbouring falls. But it did strike me in Belfast that there was a greater sense of progression in some ways in the Falls Road. You know, there were new facilities, new centres, playgrounds and the like. Things seemed to be moving on more on the falls to the Shankill. And on some level, the peace was bought and that kind of makes sense. But one plaque on the Shankill that I love and is very unique, it's a beautiful blue Ulster heritage plaque, doesn't honour a paramilitary figure, but a figure for peace. A woman called Sandy Patterson from the Shankill, born in 1904. Patterson came from a Methodist background, but she went on to become the central figure in the peace movement of the 1970s in Protestant Belfast. And when the Sunday Independent travelled up to interview her from Dublin in 73, they noted that she was, quote, a woman who dines with the Queen, but who is still proudly working class, which is, you know, about as brilliant a Shankill Road description as you're likely to find for anyone.
If it isn't too ironic to mention it as a parallel to someone from the Shankill, it reminds me of when Martin McGuinness shook hands with the Queen a couple of years ago and then just joked to the journalist afterwards, yeah, she was a nice woman, still a Republican, so that it didn't change his outlook in the world all that much. Sadie Patterson's great achievement was something called the Women's March of 1976, and that was something which really grabbed the attention of the world at large.
Beautiful moment. On the 28th of August 1976, a women's procession for peace makes its way down the Shankill. And an elderly woman who was looking on in amazement, one journalist said that she turned to him and said, there must be 35 million of them, which reminds me a little bit of Dougal and Father Ted, you know, and his crowd estimations. But in reality, there were tens of thousands of women and, you know, a lot of supportive men, the ones who weren't interned anyway, on the streets that day, and painting a vivid picture of it. One historian has described children in prams, youngsters holding their mother's hands, teenage girls, arms linked together, housewives in summer dresses, old age pensioners, trade unionists, Catholic nuns and priests marching alongside Protestant clergy. It's the kind of mental image, you know, when you look at the Shankill in recent days that we just cannot imagine. And yet it happened in a much darker time in 1976.
And if the symbolism of that, of Catholic nuns marching alongside Protestant clergy, if that symbolism wasn't already striking enough, you then had women from both communities marching to the graves of child victims.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the idea of bringing people onto the streets, it's powerful on one level because it just says to paramilitaries that we're not afraid of you, you know, that we can take the Shankill Road and we can walk down. That has real emotional power. And that kind of paved the way for the peace people, the community for peace people who came after and actually won the Nobel Peace Prize for efforts in building kind of cross-community peace initiatives. But the thing that really sticks with me, what they did at that time in the kind of second half of the 70s, and which really captured the public imagination, was that these three young children, the Maguires, they're killed in very tragic circumstances, and 10,000 Protestant and Catholic women, and they're almost all women, marched together to the graves of those children from the Falls and the Shankill. And the kids had been run over by a car. It was driven by a provisional IRA member, fatally shot though by the British Army, who were trying to make a getaway. So there was not a question of who was to blame. You know, do you blame the young IRA man driving the car? Do you blame the soldiers who shot him and caused him to lose control of the car? They weren't interested in the question of blame. What was so remarkable about these women in the 70s is that rather than saying it's your fault, they came together and said, how do we find a solution? How do we get out of this? And that was what concerned women like Sadie Patterson.
One of the things which was also remarkable about Sadie Patterson is that she managed to transcend the boundaries in some ways, and that she was interviewed by the press in Dublin, which at the time was probably fairly blinkered as to the people that it was actually meeting and talking to.
Exactly. I mean, the reports in the southern newspapers were the one thing. You know, every day was the latest sectarian killing or the latest attack. So someone like Sadie Patterson from the Shankill is a real interest figure for the media in the South. And the Sindo travel up and they profile her brilliantly. And the writer ends the piece by saying, as I left, she said, don't forget, every negative note can mean a life in Northern Ireland. Make it positive. So that's a really beautiful thing to say. You know, you try and write something good about this place if you can. And she believed in this kind of common ground between Christians. 1979, she travels down to Dublin for the papal visit, which is incredible. And addresses a peace vigil at St. Patrick's Cathedral on the eve of the Pope's visit to Ireland. So, I mean, remember what was happening in the other sphere of politics, where you had the political leader of loyalism, Ian Paisley, denouncing, confronting the Pope when he speaks in the European Parliament, calling him the Antichrist. And here's a woman from the Shankill Road who travels down to Dublin to say, this is a good thing and we need to build peace between all Christian people on the island of Ireland. Absolutely remarkable.
As laudable as that whole gesture was, and as amazing as it was to see the women leading the march in 1976, you could argue that all of this has been over-romanticised, and you could pose the question whether the women really did have any significant impact.
Yeah, if you pick up the book, you know, Lost Lives, which is a masterclass, it kind of tries to profile every single life that was lost in the conflict in the North. And I mean, if you pick up Lost Lives, the first thing you notice is the book doesn't stop in 1979. You know, if anything, it gets worse. The conflict kind of spirals. Again, so there is always the danger in kind of exaggerating the impact of the women who stood for peace in the Shankill and other communities. And one historian of that movement, the Peace People, makes the point that there was some favourable doorstep response, but it didn't translate into people willing to become actively involved. The Peace People experience had come and gone more or less in 3 or 4 months. I think people just found it very difficult to sustain that kind of movement. I think the fear of the paramilitaries was very, very real. But the fact that it was even attempted, the fact that women came together and said, we need to stand against this violence, is just so laudable in itself and deserves commemoration too.
I suppose in its own sad way, the fact that they started out with such powerful gestures meant that if you just repeated them, then they would have lost their potency and that there was no other way to sort of escalate it. If you start with big gestures like that, it's very difficult to advance it onwards. Do you think, and this is bringing it back to the modern day, is there a prospect of a movement like that, whether led by women or anyone else, ever happening again?
That's a great question. And that kind of dawned on me watching the television. Could we see it again? And there was a really abysmal video that went viral during the week. I don't know if you saw it. A woman clapping on the rioters from the sidelines. Maybe we shouldn't be saying things are going viral at the moment. But she's standing there on the side of the street. And she's applauding these kids, you know, a mother clapping on her son going to get involved in a riot. But, you know, most mothers, regardless of their background, don't want to see their children entangled in that kind of stuff. So could we see another such march for peace and calm through the streets of the Shankill? You know, and if we do, you know, will it be mothers and women who lead it again? I would bet it probably will be. But the Ulster Museum in Belfast, in the Botanic Gardens, really powerful place. They have this great exhibition on the Troubles, and it's ever changing and evolving. It's designed in such a way that if you visit it every couple of months, you'll see different things. But it doesn't only tell the story of the paramilitaries, but the kind of social history of Ulster during the conflict. And it talks a lot about that women's movement and the peace movement more broadly. And I think that we should never forget that while there was a lot of violence, and there was a lot of violence on the island of Ireland, and not just in the north, also on the streets of Dublin, more people participated in the movement for peace than ever partook in the violence. Mm. And that, you know, that could be the case once more. So perhaps just that symbolic walk down the Shankill Road saying, this does not represent us and this is not what we want, would be a very, very powerful thing.
Yeah, I'm really glad, just in passing, by the way, that you mentioned the Ulster Museum, because the Ulster Museum, when all of these times have passed, both in the virus sense and in the tension sense, when they've passed, everybody should go to the Ulster Museum, because honestly, it's like, I don't know whether you thought this, Donal, in your time up there, it's basically like a greatest hits of museums, because you've got like all the social history stuff and all the exhibits about life in the 1970s and 1980s, and like a Ming vase around one corner and like a dinosaur skeleton around another. Like, if you basically just wanted like a world hits of histories, you could basically just go up to the Botanic Gardens and spend an hour and a half walking around there and you'd have a cracking time.
Well, I remember one man with typically dry Belfast humour, as I looked at the skeleton of that dinosaur, he said, there's still a few dinosaurs in Northern Ireland today.
On that profound note, we will leave it. Donal Fallon, as ever, thank you very much for bringing us up to speed on that this lunchtime. Donal Fallon is a historian. He's the author of the Cabir Tibi books, and he's the presenter of the Three Castles Burning podcast on Dublin history, which you'll find anywhere that you get your podcasts.
On the record, on Newstalk,
with Pinergy, supplying energy with insight to forward-thinking Irish businesses.